Hello, folks, and welcome to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and as always, joining me is Filippo D'Analfo and Chris Sologi.
Hello.
Kind of a tiny house today. Not a whole lot of stuff happened this week. I think everybody's just kind of hunkering down and waiting for the election to be over.
Yeah. And the holidays are coming up, so, yeah.
Everybody, I think, in general, is just kind of exhausted.
Yeah.
So I think everybody just sort of decided to take the week off. But some shit still happened, so we got some things.
Yep.
So amongst other things we're going to be talking about a certain very popular app that Twitter just killed. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about some voter fraud that happened in Iowa. And not by the people you were being told it would be committed by. And to round it all up, we're going to be talking about probably one of the biggest marketing bullshit arguments in the history of video games, the Bit Wars.
Yeah. I lived and through that, so that's going
we
to be
all
fun
lived
to talk.
Through it, and, you know, it's kind of funny because, in hindsight, it was really stupid.
Yep.
But that was just, we'll talk about it later, but because there's some technical stuff we have to get into explaining exactly what a bit is, mm-hmm. which is funny because they kept telling us, all these bits, and it's like, dude, this has got like 16 bits, and very few of us ever stopped to think, wait, what's a bit?
Yeah.
But anyway, start us off. Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I've been still going through the second book of the Rare Revelations series, The Rise mm-hmm. of the Empire. It's probably one of the slower books in the series because there's just so much politics and stuff going on. Mm-hmm. But it gets kind of boring pretty quickly. But what I do remember is that it picks up quite a bit towards the end of that book. So, I'll keep plugging away and go through that. I still like Michael J. Sullivan, even though sometimes he does get a little wordy. So, it's all right. So, I've also been, since I finished my Python course, I worked on a project that I've been wanting to finish, and that's actually using the iTunes API to get album artwork, descriptions, track lists, all that fun stuff for, the record store. So that's all working now. Managed to do that. Very, very fun. One thing I will say, don't mix spaces and tabs because Python doesn't like that and it will give you some very, very strange results.
Yeah.
Running your script and then only having one result even though it processed 100 of them. Okay, where did the other 99 of them go?
Yeah.
A lot of running around. I had my eye doctor's appointment this week, had to do a whole bunch of errands and stuff. So I've been out and about, and it's getting cold out there.
Oh yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Even down here.
Yeah.
Of course, the weird thing about autumn in the south of the U.S. is that you get up in the morning and the mornings are very brisk.
Yeah.
Like 50 degrees, 54, 57, brisk,
Yeah.
And then you get up and then around noon it's like 81.
Yeah.
It's really weird. I used to hate it too when I was a kid because I get up in the morning and I'd have to put on a pair of jeans. Because it would be like, you get up and, remember the thing was is that, when I was a kid, you had to get up at around like around 6 o'clock and, catch the bus at around 6:30.
Yeah.
In the morning.
Yeah.
And, you'd get out there, it'd be freezing cold. And he's like, oh, I got to get my jacket and I got to get my blue jeans on and my boots and everything. And then it turns around, it's around lunchtime, and it's like 83, and I'm like, fuck!
And it's like melting through the rest of the school day.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, All right. Well,
that's been pretty much my week.
All right, what about you, Chris?
With the World Series stuff going on, I decided to watch Major League.
Of course.
And that's one of those movies that I saw a lot on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't always see the whole thing, or obviously like the uncensored version. So I was surprised to see all of the cursing that's in that movie. From early on throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's still a good movie. It's a weird idea for a movie. Like, oh, here's this team that has been in the shitters for decades. And their whole triumphant thing is, we made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Yep.
Not win the
World
Series.
Well, it's the Cleveland Indians. I mean, you have to remember at one time, you know, like if you ever watched old Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies and stuff, you know, they had Cleveland Indian jokes all the time because the Cleveland Indians were the shit back then.
Yeah.
And then they went into this long ass slump that just went on for decades upon decades.
Yeah.
So they basically became the joke of the league.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, still a great movie. Holds up really well, especially when you see some of the actors in there and you're like, well, Charlie Sheen, now he's a
crazy person.
Probably more of a mess than his character was in that.
Yeah.
Trying to see who else is in this. Tom Berenger.
Mm-hmm.
He did a pretty good job. Dennis Haysbert.
Yeah.
A role that didn't really recognize him much in that role.
Mm.
As Pedro Serrano.
Yeah.
Now he's way different. Wesley Snipes, really good in that role.
Willie Mays Hayes.
Yep. I want to say somebody else was in there. I'm not just seeing it here. The other thing about it is all of the overt racism.
Yeah, well, it was 1989.
All these white people wearing like Native American war paint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The headbands with the feathers and all of the Indian terms like, oh, the wigwammers.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this
ow wow, the teepee talk.
I'm glad when I've gone to Indians games and followed them in the 90s and since then, they don't do that stuff anymore.
No, they don't.
Worst thing is just having the Chief Wahoo logo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've been slowly minimizing, though not...
over the years.
Not to the point of actually getting rid of it yet.
Yeah. They are... He's shrinking exponentially until eventually he'll just be...
A dot.
He'll be the dot over the eye in Indians.
Yeah, he's still on the... uniforms, and I think the first two games of the World Series is on the hats.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's the Block C today.
Yeah.
As that game's going on right now. And, it's a great movie. Doesn't hold up in terms of all the racism, but
it's a good time piece.
Yeah, it was, you have to remember, it was a different time, you know,
This is about the time that the actual Indians were making moves that would actually lead to the great times in the 90s.
Yeah.
Trading Joe Carter for some picks that would actually be great players.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that. So, yeah, it was great. And obviously the Indians won the first game, lost the second. Now they're in the middle of the third.
Mm.
Now it's in Chicago. Which is great to have all this happening in late October, where it's going to be in the 40s for most of these games. So we get the Midwest weather going on now.
Yeah.
Along with that, I watched Keanu, which is the
Key and Peele movie.
Yeah. Which is hilarious.
Yeah.
As these two guys that are not gangbangers at all.
Nope.
Decide to try and fake their way into that after Peele's cat, Keanu, is stolen out of his home.
And yes, before you ask, yes, Keanu Reeves does voice the cat.
Yeah, Key gets high, and the cat is part of that. Also, George Michael.
Oh, he's still around?
Because...
plays himself.
Hmm. Yeah.
He's like a big musical part of the movie.
Hmm. Yeah.
As obviously the gangbangers find out Key has George Michael all over his iPod. So he tries to convince him how fucking hard he is, hardcore. Eventually gets him to buy into it and sing with him and all that. So when Key gets high, he fucking imagines himself in a George Michael movie, low res and all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's just some great moments. Definitely people should check out that movie.
Yeah,
And all this happens because of the cat. Because the kitten is so damn cute, everybody mm-hmm. wants him. They're willing to kill for him. And deal drugs and all this other shit.
Mm. Well, if Teresa is anything to go by.
Yeah, true enough.
And definitely something that Phil is interested in. I watched the pilot episode of Mr. Robot.
Okay.
Which was really good.
Yeah.
And, Rami Malek does a great job of being, like, a strung-out nerd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, real depressed. Definitely has a lot of social issues and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very much has that sort of awkward, I don't really want to deal with people sort of vibe going on.
Yeah.
Which, real good in the first episode. I definitely want to watch more of that.
Yeah, I'll just say that, it goes in some very strange directions, so just try to stick with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was watching, there's a Mr. Robot VR video on one of the things on PSVR, and that was interesting. It was just, you're just like in his apartment.
Yeah.
As he does things.
Mm.
Which is weird, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, along with that, I've been just playing some more PSVR stuff throughout the week. I got a couple of videos that are going to be going up probably tonight for Super Hypercube and Super Stardust Ultra. I got a couple more I want to do this weekend. Probably get Res Infinite and Loading Human Chapter 1.
Yeah.
That game, I started up. Got to a point where I was like, okay, this would be good for video. Because you just start out, it starts out with you, it's like 2086, something like that, so it's a good bit way in the future. But in this beginning part, I'm just sitting on this couch watching the sunrise, or sunset, I guess. And I'm just like using two move controllers, and so I'm like picking up these beer bottles, just throwing them around the place, just breaking them and picking up some books. Like, oh, what is this book? Bring it up closer to the camera. Oh, throw it. Boom. Get out of here. And you go through like a little tutorial to explain how to actually move around, which is really weird. Then they put you in a bathroom.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of stuff to pick up. He has comments about a lot of the things that you pick up.
Yeah.
And it's real silly. Because I'm sitting there like trying to jam a toothbrush into his eye. Because there's a big mirror there, so I'm like, oh, I'll see what I can do with my guy. Like, I'm supposed to shave his beard.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can give him a Hitler mustache or something stupid. I don't think you can shave his head, but you gotta do what you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the video is going to start with that whole area. I was sitting there, like, throwing stuff around. I threw this thing over my shoulder and landed in the toilet. It's like, oh, this is pretty good. There's, like, a hand dryer. You can actually dry your hands. It's real weird.
Hmm.
So that thing looks kind of neat. Hopefully it goes well. It has a little bit of trouble with controls. In a sense, I kind of have to finagle with the motion stuff, to get it to pick up things. Like,
because
it sort of highlights it in like a purple glow. If you can pick it up, and it's like me just kind of trying to angle it just right to get the orange, the purple glow.
Yeah.
It's like, but you can also like sit there and twist your wrist and look at the dude's arms like doing unnatural things. Like, oh, his wrist, if I just flip the move controller around, his wrist just goes swirling around.
Yeah.
Like those things, like there's no actual
Bones there.
Yeah.
Nope.
Just VR bones, which means they're not real. Which is the best kind of bones. So yeah, that's been largely it for me this week. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, first and foremost, I finished Guilty Gear.
Oh. Finally got that character to unlock?
I finally unlocked Sin Keesk, and I certainly understand why they gave him such a big
price
at first, because holy shit, is he a beast. And I thought that, you know, Ramlethal could just kick your ass. He has this one move that is like, it's a charge move, but if you get it correctly, it'll take off a good chunk of your life bar, and then immediately after it hits, you can basically machine gun the thing, and all of a sudden it turns into like a Chun-Li's flash kick type move, which takes off even more
yes.
of your life bar. So that move alone makes him OP, but he's also got like these sliding moves, and he's also got this this big like overhead smash move that takes up like almost 2/3 of the screen. he does have one big weakness though, which is that he's basically, his speed and his ability to come back from all these moves is determined by how much of how hungry he is. Because there's this weird sort of secondary feature of his character where he has to occasionally eat to fill back up his appetite bar, because if it gets empty, after you pull off one of his big special moves, he'll basically go, exhausted, basically, and it takes him a couple seconds to recover. Which, anybody in the fighting game community knows, it only takes a few seconds.
Yeah. Recovery time is a bitch.
Yeah. So, other than that, so now that that's there, I'm going to try and start saving up cash to get Revelator. Because I do not intend on getting any of the DLC characters, because why should I when they're already all in Revelator?
Right.
So I got that. I also recently went and got a copy of Battlefield 1. And holy shit, that is the most visceral Battlefield game I've ever played.
I've heard a lot of really good things about that game.
This game really does sort of drive it into your head just how seriously brutal and gruesome that World War I was. Because we're talking trench warfare, we're talking mustard gas, you know, we're talking dudes straight up, you know, nailing dudes over the heads with spike clubs. It's, we're talking like old school German tanks and Zeppelins and fucking biplanes, you know, Bedouin warriors on horseback cutting fuckers' heads off with sabers.
Yeah, it seems like they've done a cool job with all the melee stuff.
Oh, yeah. Probably, as far as melee is concerned, probably the best I've seen it applied in a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
Hey, you can charge people with bayonets.
Yeah, believe me, melee is not easy to do correctly in an FPS. It takes a good deal of calculation and stuff to make it work.
Yeah.
And DICE made it work.
Yeah.
That's why most shooters just make it you're hitting them with the butt of your gun. It's a one-hit kill.
Yeah.
Just say, fuck it, you're done.
And I have no doubt that this game is probably going to kill Call of Duty this year.
No, I don't doubt it either.
I mean, people have been talking about a Call of Duty killer for years. This is the one. This one is going to kill Call of Duty this year. Yeah. It may completely fuck the whole annual release model for Call of Duty for a while.
Yeah.
So other than that, I went book shopping today. So I went and bought a few things. I bought a copy of N.K. Jemisin's The Fifth Season, which, for those of you who don't know, this is the book that won the Hugo Award for Best Novel this year. Jemisin is the first woman of color to have won that award.
Yeah.
And if you've known anything about what's been going on in the sci-fi community for the last few years, you realize why that's such a big deal.
Yeah, there have been some issues with the Hugo Awards of late.
Yeah. We're not going to go into too complicated. That'll more or less be a time for another show. But basically what you need to know is a bunch of racist, cis, white, hetero males, for whatever reason, got a wild hair up their ass and decided they were being oppressed.
Yeah.
So they created a slate of entries they called the quote unquote sad puppies as sort of like a protest. It's more or less failed the last couple of times they've attempted it.
Yeah.
And at this point nobody takes them seriously anymore.
Yeah.
The weird thing though is that because of that, there's occasionally been some surprises. It's believed that the sad puppies thing is the reason, part of the reason why Si Jin Liu's Three Body Problem won the Hugo for Best Novel last year.
I would have thought that it was because it was awesome, but...
Well, there's that as well, but there was some other stuff going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter because it still ended up going to a result that, you know, the sad puppies would have hated anyway.
Yeah.
So still worked out for everybody.
Yeah.
And other thing I brought, well, I bought a couple other stuff too. I also bought a copy of Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain. Those of you who are artists may be familiar with this book. I've been wanting to get back and really learning how to draw for a long time. And, when I started bringing that up to people, every one of them started recommending me and says, you got to get this book. It'll help you a lot. It helped me a lot. You know, I've heard everyone from like Aaron Hansen on Game Grumps recommending it to people. Those you don't know, Aaron Hansen is also Egoraptor. Just those of you who are curious. I figured, you know what? If this is the thing that's finally going to get over all that, you know, all that stress and just mental blocks that keeps me from doing it, then this will be it.
Yeah.
So, it's pretty much been my week. I'm kind of tired this week, tonight, because usually I am already kind of tired because we are taping this around 9 o'clock at night. But I had my grandmother got some back surgery in the middle of this week, so I was out helping her buy groceries. And so I'm kind of wiped out.
No, we'll try to motor through the rest of these things. And
No. Let's not.
Well, I mean, we're not going to go 3 hours like we did last week.
No, we aren't going to go 3 hours like we did last time, but I don't want to rush through it either.
Yeah.
But anyway, so has anybody got anything else they want to add?
Nope. Good.
All right. Well, then, I guess it's once again time for everybody's favorite segment of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, I want to ask everyone here a quick question. Who here uses Mozilla Firefox?
I do.
You do? What about you, Chris?
On occasion.
All right. Who here is using it right now?
I'm not, but I can be.
Okay. Chris, I am, in fact, using Firefox right this second. So, Phil, Chris, I want you guys to go and bring up Firefox real quick.
Okay.
Okay.
Tell me when you have it up.
That's up.
Okay. Yeah. Now, some of you guys who are computer freaks will probably already know what I'm fixing to talk about. For those who don't, there's a little Easter egg that you can find in Firefox. All right, you guys ready?
Sure.
All right, I want you to go up to the address bar, all right?
Yeah.
Delete whatever in the address bar. Okay. And in the address bar, I want you to type about, colon, Mozilla, no spaces, just about, colon, Mozilla, one line. Got it?
Yeah.
You both got it? All yeah. right, hit enter.
Okay.
Yeah, so you're probably wondering what the fuck you're looking at here.
I'm confused.
Yeah, Chris, are you seeing it too?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me just read what we have here. This is it's a page with a dark red, and in white type it says, "The twins of Mammon quarreled. Their warring plunged the world into a new darkness, and the beast abhorred the darkness. So it began to move swiftly and grew more powerful. It went forth and multiplied, and the beast brought fire and light to the darkness." From the Book of Mozilla, chapter 15, verse 1. So, I'm guessing you want an explanation.
Yeah, that's not what you'd expect to find in the web browser, but okay.
Okay, so first and foremost, did any of you guys know about this before I brought this up?
No, I didn't.
What about you, Chris? You didn't know it?
No.
Okay, what this is it's called the Book of Mozilla. This is a Easter egg that's hidden in every... that has been hidden in every edition of this particular web browser since it originally premiered as Netgear back in 1995. What this is an allegorical, sort of vaguely apocalyptic description of particular events that happened during the development and release of this particular version. So, like, for example... the very first, when Netscape 1.1 was released in 1995 and, you know, was basically in every sequent 1, 2, 3, and 4X version, right. If you did the same thing about .mozilla, this is what it would say. It would say, "And the beast shall come forth surrounded by a roiling cloud of vengeance. The house of the unbelievers shall be razed, and they shall be scorched to the earth. Their tags shall blink until the end of days." From the Book of Mozilla, chapter 12, verse 10. The chapter and verse number refers to December 10th, 1994, the date that Netscape Navigator 1.0 was released.
Hmm.
Now, the beast, which is brought up all the time in these things, is specifically meant to be a metaphor for what was then Netscape and now is Mozilla.
Hmm.
Basically, any type of punishment towards the unbelievers are traditionally biblical, but with the strange threats that their quote-unquote tag shall blink until the end of days. In this case, it was referring to users who didn't conform to standards. So, in 1998, when Netscape released its open code, code is open source and started the Mozilla project. This is what this is what you would get if you did the same thing. It would say, "And the beast shall be made legion. Its numbers shall be increased 1,000,000-fold. The din of a million keyboards, like unto a great storm, shall cover the earth. And the followers of Mammon shall tremble." From the Book of Mozilla, chapter 3, verse 31, red letter edition. Specifically, it's believed, of course, that Mammon in particular is meant to be referenced to Microsoft.
Yeah.
And specifically Internet Explorer,
which
was Netscape's chief competition back in the day.
Yeah.
So eventually there's a few more of these. If you want to go on Wikipedia and go to Book of Mozilla, they got a bunch of these. Eventually, they've got one talking about how the beast dies and then comes back like a phoenix. That's when Firefox was released.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you look at it now, this is the Book of Mozilla 15.1, the one that we have now.
Hmm.
this is the one that's been there since January 23rd, 2013.
Yeah.
The Twins of Mammon reverts to Apple and Google, whose mobile operating systems, respectfully iOS and Android, have taken a duopoly of the mobile OS market.
Yeah.
The New Darkness refers to the closed nature of traditional app stores. The Beast, moving swiftly, refers to the new rapid release cycle of Firefox. The phrase "went forth and multiplied" refers to Firefox becoming multiple things through Firefox for Android and Firefox OS. The verse number 15.1 refers to the code freeze to Firefox OS 1.0, which was January 15, 2013. So, this is, like I said, a little Easter egg that's been included several times in Firefox and Netscape previously. What's funny is for a long time, people who've been looking at this have been thinking, like, does this mean Mozilla is part of the Illuminati or something? But no, it's just a bunch of nerds and their lame jokes.
Yeah.
Because, of course, it would be a bunch of computer nerds who would come up with shit like this.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, my friends, has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid.
That was a fun one.
Yeah. Man. You gotta imagine what I thought when I first discovered that. Because that looks like some shit you'd find on the dark net or something.
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so, moving on. We gotta get out of our way, our assholes of the week. And this week, well, we had a couple places we could choose from, and it's probably going to get worse probably next week. By the way, for those of you who don't know, next week, next Friday, is going to be our show before the election.
Yep.
Official voting, which is on November 8th. We're going to try and get as many people as we can that day so that we can sort of – we're probably – that whole episode is probably just going to be – and this is just a guess because plans may change, but that's probably going to be the all political show.
Yeah.
And it's probably just going to be a lot of us just sort of shaking our hands and wondering how it came to this.
Yeah.
But for this week, there was only one place we could go to. So, you guys remember a little while ago when a bunch of those dudes from the Bundy Ranch and a few of their other legion of douchebags took over a bird sanctuary?
Yeah.
And it was a big thing. They had rifles and shit. They were planning, they were saying, "You come at us, we're gonna shoot," and nobody took them seriously. People kept sending them boxes full of dildos and lube. You know?
Yeah.
These guys thought that they were gonna have like this big last heroic stand, and nobody gave a shit. Everybody thought, it's like, nobody. The one dude ended up dying, and that's because he was a dumbass who tried to shoot back at the cops. Well, anyway, what you need to know is a bunch of the Bundy clan and some of their tag-alongs were arrested and indicted for a conspiracy, you know, to commit treason, blah, 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 et cetera. Well, this week the jury found them not guilty.
Okay. I'm not quite sure how that works.
They stacked
the jury, or?
Well, let me ask: are you familiar with a term called jury nullification?
Vaguely, but
I'm not sure if they have that up in Canada. Basically, jury nullification is when people say if they had it stacked or whatever, nobody's really sure. It's been thought that the jury was basically somehow influenced or was predominantly supportive or sympathetic to their views somehow. And so even if the law is clearly against them, if the law has clearly been broken, the jury can actually, if they want to, can just turn around and just say not guilty. Because, you know, that, you know, if That's how a trial by jury works. The jury is the one ultimately who decides if a person is guilty or not. And, well, that's how it happened. And you better believe this is not going to set a very good precedent.
No.
If they're wise, the federal government would go ahead and start filing federal charges as soon as they can.
Yeah.
Because you're going to want to nip this shit in the bud really quickly.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, well, there's been a whole bunch of other wannabe militia assholes who've been wanting to do shit like this for a long time. And they could end up having the same result. So yeah, these dipshits are now free.
Yes.
Ugh. But let's turn it back around, and we'll go to our hero of the week. Gentleman Evan McMullins. Who's Evan McMullins? Evan McMullins is a conservative candidate for president who was basically sort of became the alternative to Donald Trump for a lot of people.
Yeah.
He's a former CIA dude, pretty conservative. I basically disagree with him on just about everything.
Okay.
But he is a man of principles and a man of clear political beliefs, which I respect greatly. He's honest and he's very clear about his views and his goals. It's, you know, basically the same reason guys like Bernie Sanders and Ron Paul basically kept getting reelected for so many years.
Yeah.
You know? And so Evan McMullin went on CNBC. For those of you who don't know what CNBC is, CNBC is basically like Fox News, except worse. CNBC is Fox without all of the naked tabloid bullshit. Probably more fanatical, but just not as corny and cartoonish.
Okay.
You know, they don't have Bill O'Reilly or Sean Hannity. You know, they're not a network of caricatures. So basically, Evan McMullin, who I want to point out, he is the primary conservative challenger to Donald Trump. And right now, if what we're going by early voting and stuff in Utah is going right now, he is actually beating Donald Trump. Keep in mind, Hillary Clinton is beating them both.
Yeah.
But see, here's the thing, because you got to remember the way our electoral voting system works. You know, depending on how many votes a person gets, that gets a certain amount of electoral votes in the Electoral College. I explained all this stuff a long time ago in another show.
Yeah.
Yeah, we vote so our districts vote for us.
Yeah. And so even if you don't get the majority vote in a particular state, you still get a certain amount of electoral votes depending on how many votes you did get. So even if you didn't win in one state, it can still win in another state, and those other electoral votes can add into it.
Yeah.
Because you got to remember, the way our system kind of works is it's sort of a first-past-the-post system.
Yeah.
So whoever gets past 270 is the person who basically becomes president.
Yeah.
So having him actually taking away all of those electoral votes from Donald Trump is a massive blow to Trump.
Yeah.
And since all the dudes on all of the major anchors on CNBC are hardline Republican establishment dudes and therefore hardline Trump supporters, you can guess just how pissed off they are at Evan McMullin. So this one day he went basically on CNBC, went through all the major shows and stuff there. And basically the whole day, they just threw shit at him.
Yeah.
I mean, they just, you know, they said he was a spoiler, you know, that he was taking all these votes away that could have gone to Trump. It's the stuff, you know, they accused Ross Perot of back during when Bush and Clinton were running for the White House.
Yeah.
Same thing they accused Ralph Nader of, even though it later turned out not to be true. But, yeah. And yeah, I mean, at one point, one of the anchors basically just started shouting, Brexit, 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 just as loudly as he could to drown out McMullen.
Real classy.
Yeah, it was pretty douchey. Hmm. But McMullen kept his cool. I mean, he didn't lose it. He was completely, he was completely level-headed. He reacted calmly. You know, even though he, as far as I'm concerned, was completely within their rights to just, you know, pick up a chair and smack one of the fuckers over the head. But he didn't. He didn't even raise his voice. He kept really cool and calm, and he did all of that under pressure on live television. And that's why he's our hero of the week.
Yeah, because if that had been Donald Trump, he would have just wigged out and started throwing chairs.
And it's really a good sort of
counterpoint.
If there's one thing about this race that I think has really done good for American politics, is it's really shown us where people stand. You know, especially when it comes to our elected officials.
Yeah.
You know, it's shown us who's principled and who isn't.
Yeah.
You know, Evan McMullen is a principled person. You know.
Yeah.
But pricks like, you know, Ted Cruz and Paul Ryan, they're not.
No, not really.
Same goes for the Democrats as well.
Yeah, there's assholes on all sides. So.
Yeah, there's assholes on all sides. But it's done a good deal to sort of, I think, I've talked in the past about how our elected officials have been living in this kind of bubble of false respectability over the last 30 years. And this race has more or less torn that bubble to shreds.
Yeah.
You know, we don't. You know, sanctimoniously do all this faux bullshit respect anymore.
Yeah.
No, we're seeing where people stand. We see whose side people are on now.
Yeah.
And it's done a lot to clear up a lot of gray area, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, moving on.
What? 3 more weeks.
Yeah, 3 more weeks, folks. It's almost over. Well, actually, it's on the 8th, so it's like, about 2 weeks and about a week and 5 days.
Yeah.
So, it's almost over, folks.
Yeah.
Almost. Just gotta hold out a little bit longer.
Yep.
We can all put this shit behind us, at least for 4 years.
Yep.
So, moving on, another political story. So, voter fraud, or at least the specter of it, has been this kind of big deal in the U.S., at least over the last 8 years, which is also during the Obama presidency. Gee, isn't that a coincidence? But, so, because of this, there's been all these, like, quote-unquote voter ID laws that have gone into people have been trying to put in effect, and people have to say, well, why would you be against, you know, someone showing their ID? You know, don't you want people to only vote once and not more than once? But as the people have to understand, that's not the reason they're trying to pass these voter ID laws, because it's not just, you know, showing up with your driver's license. You also have to, like, show up with your birth certificate and all this other bullshit.
Yeah.
It's specifically meant to target minority people who may not have the, you know, who may not, you know who their parents are, or they can't afford to go get an ID. Because believe it or not, getting that shit costs money.
Yeah.
But recently, we do finally have a case of voter fraud to be found in the state of Iowa. But surprise! It wasn't by a Democrat.
No.
It was a Republican.
Weren't they the ones who were, like, warning everybody about that?
Yeah. And she was a Trump supporter, too.
Shocking.
Yes. From the Des Moines Register. Des Moines woman has been arrested on suspicion of voting twice this month. Oh, hold on. Automatic. Stupid. Automatic play videos. A Des Moines woman has been arrested on suspicion of voting twice this month in the general election, police and court records show. Terry Lynn wrote, at 5, was booked into the Polk County Jail about 3:40 p.m. Thursday on a first-degree election misconduct charge, which is a Class D felony. Wrote, a registered Republican, reportedly cast an early voting ballot at the Polk County Election Office on 122nd Avenue and another ballot at a county satellite voting location in Des Moines, according to a Des Moines police report. Wrote was one of three voter fraud suspects reported to police Wednesday by the Polk County Auditor's Office. It's the first time in 12 years that Polk County Auditor James Fitzgerald can remember ever having to report potential voter fraud, he said Thursday morning. The other two suspects are accused of casting mail-in ballots and also voting in person, according to police reports. As of Friday morning, neither of those suspects has been arrested. The case is under an investigation by Des Moines police. I think it shows that our voting system works in Iowa, that we're capable to catch it, Fitzgerald said. Tensions are running high on both sides as Election Day approaches, the county auditor said. But the cases of double voting could also have been simple mistakes. That's not for me to decide, he said. Wrote was held in jail on a $5,000 bond, but she had been released as of Friday afternoon. Her next court appearance was scheduled for November 7th, court records show. Early voting in Polk County started September 29th. Election Day is November 8th.
Yeah.
So this shows a couple things. First things first, the way the system we've got set up actually shows that voter fraud is really fucking hard to pull off in the United States.
Yeah, they're paying attention.
Yeah. Also, I just want to tell you, I voted in the last couple presidential elections, and I can tell you by experience, the old ladies who usually volunteer to run the polling places, they don't fuck around.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want to piss off Granny. I'm just warning you right now.
Yeah.
Second thing that also shows out, the specter of voter fraud is massive bullshit. It always has been. It always will be. Don't believe the hype, people.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. They are lying to you. And as I say with a lot of that, with just about everything involving bullshit, if somebody does bullshit, call them out on it.
Yeah.
You know? You're under no obligation to stay silent in the face of assery.
Yeah.
That's what I'm calling assetry.
Assetry, yeah. Good word.
In fact, it is your civic moral duty to call them out when they commit such assetry.
Hmm.
So be a patriotic American and oppose bullshit.
Yeah.
Now, moving on from that, if you woke up this morning and suddenly heard a loud popping noise, suddenly just erupting from, you know, beyond the trees and the mountains, that's because you heard the collecting explosion of every teenager's head when it was announced that Twitter has officially killed Vine.
Yeah. Vine, their little 6-second video service that they had acquired.
Yeah.
And then pretty much did nothing with.
No. They just could not find a way to monetize it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much the reason.
Yeah, well, it didn't help that, you know, they didn't really feature it or do anything like that. It stayed a separate app. It wasn't integrated into Twitter like Periscope is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it had a lot going against it.
Mm. So, really, this is the thing you got to remember is Vine is how a lot of modern internet comedians made their, you know, made is where their bread and butter is.
Yeah.
You know, King Batch, you know, Zach, you know, what's his name? You know, a lot of people.
Yeah, it's also been a great way to get, like, sports replays and such out there.
Oh, yeah. It's just, you'd be surprised how being limited to 6 seconds, how much creativity you can get out of people.
Yeah.
Oh, and I also forgot, this is kind of a lot of world star hip hop's bread and butter is.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm saying a lot of these folks basically telling their audience, okay, going, well, Vine's going away, but I'm not. So
yeah.
I'll just go over here. I'm on Snapchat or I'm on Instagram. If you want to follow me, I'm here.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, 5 Second Films was already, you know, doing this on YouTube before Vine became a thing. So
yeah.
They really just need to, all they'll have to do is move over to YouTube. And that's only if somebody else doesn't buy Vine first.
Yeah.
Which is completely possible, considering
I want to say Pornhub has joked about it.
Yeah.
Saying 6 seconds is all we need.
Ouch. Yeah.
Well, that would basically clear up the ability to have all those adult vines that occasionally show up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Pornhub getting it actually wouldn't be that bad of an idea.
Yeah.
But,
Twitter could use the money.
Yeah, yeah, Twitter could use the money.
Yeah, it's been rumored that this is part of them being sold.
Yeah.
Sort of shedding the stuff that's not doing anything.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to make themselves more appealing to an acquisition.
Yeah.
Oh, you got this thing that you can't actually monetize because your ads would be longer than the videos themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it would just basically be, if they wanted to do any kind of ad, it would basically just be some dude shouting a name in like half a second.
Yeah. You know what we need blipverts.
Yeah.
Except without the head exploding thing.
Yeah. Like, basically what I'm thinking is you'll just see the logo and somebody go, Pepsi! And then that's it.
Hey, it worked for Sega.
Doritos!
So, R.I.P. Vine.
Oh, by the way, and we don't have this on the show notes, but we might as well bring it up. Speaking of things getting sold, anybody heard about AT&T trying to buy Time Warner?
Yeah, no. Not trying. They're doing it.
Yeah, for good chunk of change too, and
$80 billion. Something.
Yeah, it was a massive amount of money, and this should worry people.
Yeah,
you should be worried.
Consolidation is a bad thing. Consumer choice would be nice, but you're not going to get that when you only have two companies.
No, so federal government. If I hope you guys in federal government are paying attention, because this is where antitrust legislation comes in.
Yeah.
You know, we have that. That is still a arm of the federal government. You should probably start thinking about using it right about now.
Yeah. It still has to be approved. So, you know, it's possible it won't go through. So,
yeah.
Keep that
But think about that. So, Time Warner, isn't that, don't they own, no, wait, is Time Warner, do they own Comcast, or is that another company?
That's another company. Time Warner owns HBO and a bunch of other media properties.
Yeah. And AT&T, who... Yeah.
And that's not Time Warner, the company that's being sold, is not Time Warner, the cable company, which makes it even more confusing.
Yeah. But anyway, so we'll probably get more into the meat of that in another show. Mm. So moving on from there, everybody knows the last Deadpool movie was a surprisingly huge hit.
Yeah.
Because it was good.
Mm.
It was actually a good movie, and, you know, somehow Van Wilder pulled it off.
it was a little rough, but it wasn't bad.
Well, it was Deadpool. Rough kind of comes with the territory.
Yeah, you could tell that Reynolds really liked the character.
Mm-hmm. But Tim Miller, is actually left the filming of the sequel. So, Chris, what do you want to tell us?
Yeah, so Ryan Reynolds and Tim Miller were sort of working together, sort of as like the duo behind the first movie. And came time to work on the second, and unfortunately they had differences. And so Tim Miller has decided not to sign on for that. So now they're looking for somebody else to replace him. And so the one of the names that's floating out there is like the head, the leader to replace him is David Leitch, who developed John Wick, or directed John Wick.
Yeah.
Which seems like a pretty good choice.
Yeah. I've been told that Ryan Reynolds is one of those actors who's known to get a little too involved behind the camera.
Yeah.
There's like a handful of actors, everyone from, you know, Reynolds, Mike Myers, Edward Norton, all those guys. They're just, you know, it's, you know, for some actors it works because they're actually good behind, you know, guys like, you know,
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck, you know, some other guys. They actually know how to, they have actually, they're good at story structure and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson. But there's some others who frankly just don't belong behind the camera.
Yeah.
But yeah, this happens. So,
yeah, from what they're saying, most of the creative team is still returning.
Yeah. Okay.
So shouldn't be too much of a change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Reynolds is still executive producer, like in the first movie. They still haven't really talked about what else is going on with that, so probably still be a while yet before we see what they're doing with it.
Yeah.
Well, in other film and television news, Star Trek Discovery, which everybody knows is the new Star Trek series.
Yeah.
Its showrunner recently stepped down. However, they are staying on as the executive producer.
Yeah, so I guess he has other projects that he's working on.
Yeah.
So he could stay on as for the day-to-day work.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, that's kind of the thing about being a showrunner. It's
it's very time-consuming.
Yeah. Because you're not just the writer or director or writer director for that matter. You are straight up directing every aspect of the fucking show.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that isn't just work on the set. We're talking producer meetings and
storyboarding
shit with the big wigs. It's stressful work.
Yeah.
Yeah. To think that freaking J. Michael Straczynski did that for every season of Babylon 5.
Yeah.
God damn. All right. So, moving once again into other TV film news, Rambo. Who here remembers Rambo? I remember Rambo.
Oh, yeah. Rambo was... and the confusing names.
Yeah. So, Rambo is coming back. It's the franchise, for what it is being rebooted, and Sylvester Stallone is nowhere in sight.
Well, I would hope not.
Yeah.
He's a little old at this point.
Yeah. But also, honestly, I'm just glad because, I'm going to be honest, they kind of turned that character into a joke.
You saw the last Rambo movie, did you?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Who here has seen First Blood?
Yeah, I have.
The original one.
Yeah.
Now, look at Rambo, the second movie.
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Because Rambo in First Blood is Rambo as he was in the book. And yes, that's right. The Rambo franchise is based on a book. Yeah. He is that crazy PTSD-addled Vietnam vet who, you know, is basically living off the grid out in the middle of the woods and is basically trying to kill the sheriff.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a fucking oiled up muscle machine with a giant Gatling gun taking out the Viet Cong.
Yeah.
They basically took a parable about the effects of the Vietnam War on Vietnam veterans and turned it into a Cold War joke.
Yeah.
And they based it entirely on a conspiracy theory that has since turned out to be bullshit.
Yeah.
Because, no, there were no POWs still in Vietnam after the war ended.
No.
They were all gone. And you people think that this is, that I'm not, that it's kind of dumb to bring this up. You realize there were still idiots here in the U.S. collecting money to have, you know, to run missions into Vietnam to try and find supposed hidden POW camps somewhere out in the Vietnam jungle.
Yeah. Hmm. But I can't say movies, I'm really surprised.
Yeah, so those movies didn't help.
No.
Is what I'm saying. So I'm glad that they're kind of rebooting it.
Now, if they take the source material and actually play it seriously this time,
yeah,
they can come up with a pretty good movie.
Yeah. Even better if they sort of take it out of, you know, the time period of the original and put it into the contemporary era.
Yeah.
You know, like instead of being a Vietnam veteran, he's like a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan.
Yeah, because that story could work in pretty much any time period.
Yeah.
It's not,
yeah, that'll work really well. Mm. And the thing is, the original Rambo himself, at least the way he was originally written, is such a compelling character in and of himself.
Yeah.
They could do some great stuff with this franchise, but they have to play careful. Because First thing you need to remember is there's still a lot of people who remember and love, as much as I hate to admit it, the old Rambo. And a lot of people who also really, really love Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And there's some people will see rebooting Rambo as a big insult to old Ronnie Reagan.
It's not like those movies disappear.
No.
Yeah.
Your childhood isn't going to be ruined because a new one comes out. Much
people like. Might finally realize that they're a bunch of jokes, which they are, but...
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, there's a bit in here about when Stallone was promoting Creed last year.
Yeah.
He was asked about who he'd like to see be the next Rambo.
Mm-hmm.
He picked Ryan Gosling.
Hmm.
And I guess somebody asked Ryan Gosling about that, and he basically just falls apart, says, "That is incredible. He's one of my favorite actors. Just the fact that he knows my name, he's the best. I'm genuinely touched that he said that. And if you're lying, you're an awful person."
Yeah. Yeah. He'd be pretty good to play Rambo.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Anyway, so
it'd be interesting to see who gets picked for that. I guess it's supposed to be directed by Ariel Roman. Hmm. Did The Criminal.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, it's not going to be directed by Uwe Boll anymore. We don't have this in the stories, but Uwe Boll has retired.
Yay!
See, we live in a time where there's a whole bunch of crap going on, and then you see a story like that, and it's like, you know, it's not all bad.
Maybe there is a God.
Yeah.
No, there isn't, but it's fun to think about it for a little bit.
Yeah.
That making movies that nobody wants to watch finally means he can't make anymore.
There might be a generation of gamers now who actually have no idea who Uwe Boll is.
Hmm,
and
that's good.
You guys are lucky.
Yeah.
Let's people get boxed by him.
Yeah. So we'll just go ahead and quickly explain to you. Uwe Boll is a hack German film director who somehow managed to get the rights for a bunch of video game franchises to make video game. To make film adaptations of them.
Yeah.
Everything from House of the Dead, Alone in the Dark, Dungeon Siege,
Far Cry,
Hostel.
I think Tunnel Rats was actually an original of his, but
yeah,
Blood Rain.
Don't go out and look for them. They all suck.
Postal was kind of like that. What was that movie that kept getting advertised on Comedy Central? It's like that uncensored,
the underground comedy movie,
something like that. These famous comedian actors.
It was like the 36 movie or something. I do know what you're talking about. It was directed by the ShamWow guy.
Yeah, it's like this, like, supposedly legendary just from the way it was marketed in the commercials and all that.
The movie was shit, by the way, just in case you're curious. It wasn't good. Yeah. That's kind of how Postal was advertised.
He even appeared in it. I think he got killed. He had himself get killed. It's like, you're a terrible movie director. You must die. Yeah. Okay, I forget what the whole part is, but yeah.
Oh, and he also made a movie about Auschwitz.
Yeah.
He plays a Nazi guard.
Oh.
He's in the trailer.
Yeah.
He's the dude sleeping next to the door where all of the, you know, the Jews are dying in the gas chamber.
Yeah.
It's fun for the whole family.
Yeah. Well, no more Uwe Boll movies.
Yeah, so you're probably wondering is, how is it that he kept getting money to do this shit? I mean, he kept putting out all these awful movies just over and over again, and yet somehow, you know, he never got, you know, the budget was always, you know, he never got anything close back to the money for the budget from the box office.
Yeah,
Postal's
budget was $15 million, box office $146,741.
Yeah.
So not even a tenth of what it cost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Granted, the Oogie Loves movie still made less, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. So you're probably wondering, how is it he kept getting, you know, money to keep making these movies? Well, the reason is because he exploited a certain loophole in the German tax code that basically... I forget how it worked, but basically, I think it had something to do with, like, art grants or something like that. But basically, you could use some of the money as, like, a tax write-off or something. And even if, you know, the money made nowhere – if the movie made nowhere near its budget back in box office sales, he could still get a nice chunk of change back from the German government.
Yeah.
You know, from the German tech.
The debt somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. For those who don't know, that particular loophole was officially fixed a couple years ago.
Yeah. Which is about when Uwe Boll movies stopped happening.
Yeah. So when he tried to make any other movies, he basically tried to go on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
To, get money for some other films, and every single one of them failed miserably.
Yeah.
Because his reputation precedes him.
Yep.
And basically, he had this one epic meltdown on one of his Kickstarter pages where he basically said, fuck you guys, I can basically just spend the rest of my life playing golf. And, yeah. Well, now, today he has officially announced that, no, he is officially retired from filmmaking.
Yay.
I'm not making any more movies.
Yeah, there's at one point he put a petition up on petitiononline.com saying if it got 1 million signatures, he'd retire.
Yeah.
That didn't take long, Dad.
Yeah.
How many signatures did it get?
Let me see.
I'm pretty sure it was like somewhere around 4 million.
Yeah. Yeah, it says April 2008 he did this. May 7th, the makers of Stride Gum announced they would give each signer a digital coupon for a pack of gum if the petition obtained the required 1 million signatures by May 14th.
Yeah.
Let's see, by July 22nd, 2012, there were around 353,000 signatures.
Oh.
So it didn't make it.
No.
No.
Oh, well, I would have.
Yeah, I would have, definitely.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so the scourge of Uwe Boll has officially been exorcised from the world.
Yeah, it seems like he had a great ego.
Yeah, so he's...
Looking at his Wikipedia, as part of publicity stunt for Postal, he released a video claiming he is, quote, the only genius in the whole fucking business.
Yeah.
That other directors such as Michael Bay and Eli Roth are, quote, fucking R words.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he once used to claim that he funded all of his monies with Nazi gold, so
I guess Michael Bay responded to that calling him a sad being.
Yeah.
Saying he didn't
and when Michael Bay is saying when Michael fucking Bay is calling you a sad being, that's
And Eli Roth said that was the greatest compliment ever. So when
because
none
Eli
of
Roth is actually cool.
When neither of those guys takes your stuff seriously, that's when you know you've got nothing.
Yeah. Like, but the thing is, a lot of those sort of weirdo indie directors often have really weird personalities. Like, you guys familiar with Ed Wood? They made a whole movie about him. He directed a bunch of movies like Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Oh, man, this is great. On April 27th, 2008, Boll responded to Bay's not caring about him comment. And so he challenged him to a boxing match.
Yeah, see, here's the thing, though. Uwe Boll is actually an awarded amateur boxer.
That's why he wants to fight these people that are not trained.
Because he can actually kick their asses.
And I guess Michael Bay's response, I never even heard his name till last week when he made threats and rants. This guy is a fucking idiot making threats to me. Clooney, Eli Roth, says he has a doctorate but uses the word R, I'm not going to say, but uses the word R word in his vocabulary. Come on. Mm-hmm. When you look at his videos, what is interesting are the backgrounds. I guess his low-rent offices with 15-year-old three-quarter machines, archaic computers. This is just some dumb chump trying to get some fame when he has none, so he has to make YouTube lame quality anger rants. This guy just wants attention because he can't get any for the so-called movies he makes. Nothing sadder when he had his screening in L.A. to an over half-empty movie house. That's one of the top directors in Hollywood saying that about this guy. He tried to fund a Rampage 3.
Yeah, and it failed miserably.
That's not based on the game, is it?
No, I think it's actually based on another
Mass
series of films he had in Germany.
Yeah,
that's a great genre.
Yeah. Anyway.
He's gone now.
All right. He's gone now, and we can all sleep good tonight, knowing that bit of information. So,
one down, moving on. Thousands more to go.
Yeah. So, it's been kind of a bad week for airliners. We had three examples of weird shit happening to planes.
Yeah.
So, first things first, an American Airlines plane at the O'Hare Airport just went and said "fuck you" and suddenly burst into flame.
Yeah, tire blew out. It somehow caught the whole thing on fire. There's videos of just fire and just smoke pouring out of this thing, and everybody got out fine. But
yeah,
the video of the crowd just standing outside of it watching it.
What the fuck just happened?
Oh, wow. And then a FedEx cargo plane also went "fuck you" and suddenly burst into flame.
Spontaneous combustion.
Yeah.
Yeah, just be happy your packages aren't on that.
Nope.
Yeah.
Feel bad for those that were.
Yeah. And to round all of that up, the plane that had been carrying vice presidential candidate Mike Pence slid off the runway at LaGuardia.
Okay.
And because of that, they literally had to shut down the entire airport.
Yeah, they've apparently been having problems at LaGuardia.
Which yeah. is
great.
If it slid off the runway, it's like, what was it doing at the time?
Trying to take off.
Trying to take off, and it slid off the runway. Lost traction, or I'm not quite sure what went on there, but
yeesh, it was trying.
Yeah, that's rough.
I guess it was trying to land in a rainstorm.
Oh,
that's possible. Slammed on the yeah, brakes, the plane.
I guess it hydroplaned or something.
Yeah, probably.
It began to slide sideways. The plane stopped in the middle of the arrestor bed. Passengers could smell the burning rubber. And it stopped just in time so it didn't go right off the runway onto a busy parkway nearby. Hmm.
Yeah.
That would have sucked.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. So,
even with these three incidents, though, air travel is still one of the safest means of getting around.
It is.
Hmm. Yeah.
But then again, you know, a bicycle doesn't just suddenly explode into flame. No. So, but you still have a point. Now, I have to ask, for this last part, am I wrong in seeing this as some sort of omen?
It was the perfect example of what's going on with the Trump campaign right now.
Yeah, yeah, it's careening off the runway.
Yeah.
Aiming for the perfect landing and then right off the side.
Yeah, so I just want to point out something. Mike Pence, Donald Trump is an asshole, yeah. but Mike Pence is even worse. Because the thing you have to remember about Mike Pence is he's all the bad parts about Donald Trump, plus he's a Jesus freak.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he, remember when he was, I think it was governor of Indiana? Indiana had that whole bathroom law bullshit going through, the same shit that North Carolina is having right now.
Yeah.
Well, the same thing that happened in North Carolina happened in Indiana under his watch.
Joy.
Mm. All right. So, finally, to round out and to end this particular episode of Let's Weekend, we need to talk a little bit about something that when we were all kids playing our video games, reading our magazines about video games, basically talking about video games, there was this thing, this technological, honestly, bullshit that the marketing and all the tech people used as a way to try and convince us to buy a particular system to try and tell us about how powerful this system was, you know, and what it could do. We're talking about the Bit Wars. Now, just to start us off, Phil, as our tech guy, explain to the listeners exactly what people mean when they're talking about bits.
Well, a bit is very simple. It's either a one or a zero. It's a switch, basically.
Yep. But,
so when you're looking at, say, an 8-bit console, and what they're talking about there is how many of those bits it can push to the processor at any given time.
Right. So when people talk about, you know, 8-bit, you know, an 8-bit aesthetic or an 8-bit style, graphics are only part of the equation. now, for example, just like for an older console, like, say, an Atari 2600, how many bits could that one do?
It wasn't even really... it wasn't even really 8-bit. It was more like 4.
Yeah.
Because most of that was just, you know, switching logic, so it was just kind of working its way on its own.
Yeah, so right around time the Nintendo came out, you know, and Nintendo was 8-bit.
Yeah.
You know. And Nintendo was the shit, and everybody was, yay, Nintendo! Mm-hmm. And then the Sega Master System came out.
Yeah.
And do you remember how many bits the Sega Master System was supposed to process?
Yeah, it was also an 8-bit system.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So all of that, and those two were basically competing against each other, and of course Nintendo wiped the floor with them.
Yeah.
Because they are Nintendo.
Yeah, back in, and that was, you know, during the time when Nintendo basically ruled everything, so.
Yeah.
You know.
You know, basically, it's funny because, you know, because you kind of want to, there is sort of the temptation to compare the video game market after Nintendo entered it, and the video game market before Nintendo entered into it, as far as consoles are concerned. Because there was actually a bunch of 4-bit consoles out there, other than the Atari.
And there was the Atari, there was the Intellivision, there was the ColecoVision, which I guess, you know.
There was also the Odyssey and a bunch of other ones. There was a lot of them.
Yeah.
And,
you know, the video game crash, like, didn't actually happen anywhere else outside of North America.
Nope. Japan. So, folks in Japan were just riding on along.
Yeah.
You know.
And that was just the console market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
PC and arcade kind of went on just fine.
Yeah.
Well, for a little while. And then the 90s happened.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay, so you got these two major consoles. You got the Nintendo Entertainment System, and you have the Sega Master System. And both of them were 8-bit.
Yep.
So suddenly, you know, both of these companies are like, you know what, eventually this technology is going to run its course. We need to come up with some new consoles. So Nintendo came out with their Super Nintendo Entertainment System, and Sega, of course, came out with the Genesis.
Yep.
Now, the Super Nintendo was 16-bit.
Yeah.
That's what the 16-bit. It was because it was twice as powerful as the original Nintendo Entertainment System was supposed to be.
Yeah. It had a bus that was twice as wide as the NES, and the process surface, I believe, actually twice as powerful.
So now what about the Genesis?
The Genesis was an interesting beast because, yes, it was a 16-bit console. It did have that 16-bit bus width. But it was actually more powerful than the Super Nintendo.
Exactly. And this is where the bit bullshit starts coming in.
Yeah.
I
do want to talk about the Super Nintendo and the Genesis here, because there was one thing you can do on your own, if you actually happen to have these, or even in emulators, you can see this phenomenon. Pull up your ROMs of, say, NHL 95 on the Genesis.
Yeah.
And NHL 95 on the SNES.
Right.
And notice how laggy the Super Nintendo version is.
Oh, yeah.
And the reason for that is, despite the fact that it did have a 16-bit bus, the processor was not fast enough. It was waiting on, the game was basically waiting on the processor to get done, so you ended up with input lag, and it just felt crappy.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas the Genesis didn't have that problem, because it had extra headroom on the processor.
Yeah. And Super Nintendo, I had a Super Nintendo, and I loved it. I think we all did.
Oh, yeah.
But that was the one flaw about the Super Nintendo, everybody had to admit.
It was easy to bog it down.
Yeah. Some of its software was just too powerful for the system.
Yeah. And then you ended up with developers, you know, later on in the Super Nintendo's life making games that, you know, took that into account.
Right.
And, you know, Chrono Trigger, for instance, you know, fantastic game. Plays fine, looks great, sounds great, doesn't lag.
Right.
But, you know, it's not a hugely demanding game. Mm-mm. But that's not the problem.
No. Okay, so the 16-bit era finally comes to a close. Well, it begins to end in the mid-90s. And suddenly we get another player that enters into the game.
Yeah.
Sony.
Yeah. Well, I thought we should probably mention Atari again.
Well, yeah, of course, because Atari had decided they wanted to enter back into the console market again in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
With a system called...
The Jaguar.
It's one of the dumbest looking controllers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yes, the Jaguar was the 64-bit monstrosity. It was going to beat all of them. It would lay low all the enemies, and their women would cry.
Well, it was a monstrosity, I'll give you that.
Yeah, this shit fell flat on its face.
Yeah.
And it's just everything about this fucking system pretty much proves how much the bit thing is bullshit.
Yeah, because it had a 16-bit CPU.
Uh-huh.
It had a 16-bit graphics bus.
Yep.
And two 16-bit memory buses. And that's how they got 64-bit. They just added the four together.
They basically just taped shit together. That's like taking, like, a... let's see if I can think of it. That's like taking, you know...
And then all adds up.
Yeah, it's simple arithmetic. God damn it.
It doesn't.
That's like taping a Blu-ray disc, you know, putting a pencil into the hole of a Blu-ray disc, taping it together, and calling it a Blu-ray player.
Yeah, it doesn't quite work that
way.
Yeah.
It's just saying the Wii is two GameCubes duct taped together.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course we also do have to mention that controller, because that controller, you know, there was the obviously there's the Philips CDI controller, which is even worse.
Yeah.
But
nobody took that seriously to begin with.
Yeah.
The Jaguar, on the other hand,
this is like the current Xbox controller with the little messenger pad stuck in it.
Mm-hmm. Except phone keypad.
Yeah.
D-pad and three buttons.
It's a fucking numerical pad right in the middle of the goddamn controller.
Yeah. I mean, we had gotten away from numeric keypads in the 80s,
yeah.
So I have no idea what Atari was thinking of trying to bring that back.
I don't know.
Those microcomputers were successful, right?
Yeah.
This is like a Commodore 64.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So, around that time, of course, we had another... person enter into the market, sort of dark horse.
1995, when
Sony PlayStation.
Yeah,
it was because of 3DO and the Atari Jaguar that people didn't take Sony seriously.
Yeah,
because
now how many
other multimedia console they're gonna fucking fail?
How many quote unquote bits was the Sony PlayStation?
It was a 32-bit processor.
Yeah, so it was actually. "Quote unquote," it had half of the bits that the Atari Jaguar had,
and it blew it out of the water.
Exactly,
in every way possible.
In every goddamn way possible, because unlike, yeah, and you know you have to remember, Atari Jaguar, it got shit like Kasumi Ninja,
yeah,
which looked like ass.
Yeah, it also got Tempest 2000, so there is one good game on the Jaguar.
Yeah, one.
Yeah, just one.
Yeah. That's kind of like looking at a lump of dog shit and going, oh, look, a chocolate chip. You know?
Wasn't Aliens versus Predator also pretty good there?
Yeah.
I mean, you can get a good game or two on any platform.
Yeah.
I mean, the new one has a good Tempest game on it.
Yeah, Tempest 2000.
But anyway, so... You know, and again, Kasumi Ninja, again, a console that's supposed to have 64 bits and looked like ass.
Yeah.
And yet, you had the Sony PlayStation, which actually only had 32 bits, was supposedly half as powerful as Jaguar was. You get Resident Evil, Final Fantasy VII,
Tomb Raider.
All of them considered graphical marvels of their time.
Yeah, and that's because that console was purpose-built for 3D.
Right.
Hmm.
Let's see, here's the thing. This still didn't kill the bit bullshit.
No, we still we saw that up until the next generation when the N64 was starting to cut out.
Yes, so the N64, which I believe was called the 64 because it was supposedly 64 bits, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The Ultra 64.
The Ultra 64.
Yeah.
It kind of sort of was, but not really.
And this, we also got the Sega Saturn as well.
Yeah, which was another 32-bit one.
Yeah. So, again, it was, you know, despite all the problems it had as far as sales go, it still had some good quality stuff on it.
Yeah.
Especially compared to the fucking Atari Jaguar.
Yeah. Yeah, if you compare the Jaguar to the N64, okay, it's a few years difference, but yeah, that's a little bit of a difference in quality, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah. Basically, bits started to mean less and less at that point.
Less and less and less. And then the Nintendo 64 comes out, which was supposedly, you know, again, twice as powerful as the PlayStation was.
Yeah.
And yet it still couldn't measure up graphically to anything the PlayStation could churn out.
No, that's mostly because Nintendo hamstrung it with cartridges.
Yeah.
So
When we talked about the reveal of the Nintendo Switch, you may remember earlier we kind of gushed about the fact that it was going back to cartridges again. And that was because the technology has advanced to the point now that you could use a cartridge and still equal, you know, anything you could do on a disc and more.
Yeah.
You can have
that wasn't the case back then. Well. Yeah, that wasn't the case back in the late 90s.
Yeah. Late 90s, you were still using ROMs. It was still very expensive to produce those chips. And Nintendo still controlled the supply.
Yep. So. And so, by the time that generation came to an end and we got the PlayStation 2... You know, finally the PlayStation 2 debuted.
Which technically, some people did try to resurrect the Bit Wars and call it the 128-bit systems with the Dreamcast.
But nobody cared.
PS2, but nobody cared by that.
Yeah. By that point, the Bit Wars had officially died. Because the truth of the matter is, the whole Bit thing was nothing but a marketing gimmick.
Yeah.
It started out as a basic description of a console's processing power, supposedly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually just became a completely useless marketing term.
Yeah, much like glass processing.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like teraflops right now.
Or 5K. Yeah. Or 4K.
Largely does mean what they say it means, but it doesn't really make the difference.
Yeah, or like, you know, 4K and 5K.
Mm. 8K.
Shit like that.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to point out here is whenever you hear any kind of debate about whether a system can go 5K or can do any of that shit, just remember, we older gamers went through this shit before.
Yeah.
It was bullshit then. It's still bullshit now.
Yeah. And just because Mark Cerny is talking about the PS4 having the ability to use half floats, and which would probably give it twice the power, just stop.
Yeah.
Stop. Just don't write that YouTube comment. Research what he's actually saying.
Yeah.
Because there's some nuance there that people aren't getting.
Yeah, he could probably PlayStation spend 4? An extra hour explaining the nuance to what he's talking about.
Yeah. That's PS4 basic, Pro is...
That's the John Carmack rule.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can give you the shorthand for what he's talking about, but it would take an extra hour to actually fully explain it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that it's really, if you want to think about it, it's basically the equivalent of a salesman at an appliance store trying to sell you a dish... trying to sell you a washer and dryer and trying to sell you on the fact that it has a spin cycle.
Yeah.
Literally. That's pretty much what the Bit Wars was, and that's what the 4K, 5K shit is now.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it can be a description, a basic description, but it tells you nothing about the actual capabilities of the product.
Yeah. It's like, just, I don't think any of us are really excited about 4K as, no. you know, as it is. But what I am excited about is something that's kind of coming along for the ride.
Yeah.
And that's HDR. Mm-hmm. That really is a game changer.
Yeah. So, with that, I think we have a show.
Yeah.
It was a nice little show. And nice it, we show. Actually managed to get a lot more mileage out of all this than I thought we were.
Yeah.
So, I would like to remind all our listeners that if you would like to write into the show, ask us questions, or, you know, comment, or just want us to have something, read something on the air, or maybe you just want to yell at us for a little while, you know, in all caps, we can be reached at Let's Weekenders, that's L-E-T-S, Let's Weekenders, W-E-E-K-E-E-N-D-E-R-S, at gmail.com. That's Let's Weekenders at gmail.com. And with that, letting everybody know, does anybody have any announcements or anything they want to say before we sign off?
I'm tired.
Yeah, I think we all are. So I'm going to go ahead and end it there. I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio and Chris Sologi, we're going to tell you good night, get some sleep out there, and 4K is bullshit. So, night, folks.
Night.
Later.